So now we'll continue our studies from last week and from this morning. We'll just go on, just continue. It will be in chapter 3 of Proverbs. I'll begin by reading, starting at verse 1. My son, forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments. And it's hard to read this King James stuff. I'll apologize ahead of time for it. For length of days and long life and peace shall they add you. Let not mercy and truth forsake thee. Bind them about thy neck. Write them upon the table of thy heart. So shalt thou find favor and good understanding in the sight of God and man. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him and he shall direct your paths. Be not wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. It shall be health to your navel and marrow to thy bones. Honor the Lord with thy substance and with the first fruits of all thine increase. So shall thy barns be filled with plenty, and thy presses shall burst out with new wine. My son, despise not the chastening of the Lord, neither be weary of his correction. For whom the Lord loves, he corrects, even as a father the son in whom he delights. Happy is the man that finds wisdom and the man that gets understanding. For the merchandise of it is better than the merchandise of silver, and the gain thereof than fine gold. She is more precious than rubies, and all the things that you can desire are not to be compared to her. Length of days is in her right hand, and in her left hand riches and honor. Her ways are the ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to them that lay hold upon her, and happy is everyone that retains her. Excuse me. The Lord by wisdom has founded the earth, by understanding has he established the heavens. By the knowledge of the depths are broken up, and the clouds drop down the dew. My son, let not them depart from thine eyes, keep sound wisdom and discretion. So shall thy life be unto thy So shall they be life unto thy soul and grace to thy neck. Then shalt thou walk in thy way safely, and thy foot shall not stumble. When thou liest down, thou shalt not be afraid. Yea, thou shalt lie down, and thy sleep shall be sweet. Be not afraid of sudden fear, neither of the desolation of the wicked when it comes. For the Lord shall be thy confidence, and shall keep thy foot from being taken. Withhold not good from them to whom it is due, when it is in the power of thy hand to do it. Say not to your neighbor, go and come again, and tomorrow I will give, when you have it by you. Devise not evil against thy neighbor, seeing he dwells securely by thee. Strive not with a man without cause if he hath done you no harm. Envy thou not the oppressor, and choose none of his ways. For the froward is abomination to the Lord, but his secret is with the righteous. The curse of the Lord is in the house of the wicked, but he blesses the habitation of the just. Surely he scorns the scorners, but he gives grace unto the lowly. The wise shall inherit glory, but shame shall be the promotion of fools. Much stuff in here. Pretty good sized chapter, but we'll see. My son, who's he talking to? That's what I like to hear. Me. He's talking to you. Forget not my law. The word law here is not a really good interpretation. It said, forget not my instructions. Law has a connotation with it. You know, that control, manipulation, power over you. And God doesn't want that to be the way you come to him. You come to him, we love him because he first loves us. He draws us with his love, not by threats of fear. And that's what the law implies. But let your heart keep my commandments, see. Let your heart or your mind keep a hold of my commandments. Because the length of days and years of life and peace shall they add to you. Did you hear that? If you keep the laws of God, the instruction of God, and let your mind hold on to these commandments that God give us, these instructions, it'll add length of days and years of life and peace will be added to you. Hello, did you hear that? How many people believe that? Not very many believe that, see? I believe what God said. He said, if you'll continue in my ways, you follow my instructions, and let your mind hold on to what I've told you, it'll add length of your days. You'll have long, not, don't mean you'll have more than 24 hours a day, it's going to have a lot more days. And by reiterating that, he said, it'll add years of life and peace to your life. Now, who doesn't want that? I really don't care if I live any longer than what I was planning to live. That's okay, but I want to live it in peace. And I'll say something further than that. I'm going to live it in peace from here on out. So once I've got to this peace, there's no way I'm giving it up. I'm sorry. I'm not giving it up. Verse 3, not let, but forsake not mercy and truth. And the next forsake, forget that wasn't there. He should say, forsake not mercy and kindness. Let me say it again. Forsake not kindness and truth. That's what it should say. Forsake not kindness and truth. The last forsake there shouldn't be there. Forsake thee, those two words shouldn't be there. Bind them on your neck and write them on the tables of your heart. You think he's talking about writing on your chest or writing in your mind? Absolutely, it's your mind. He said, write them in your mind. See, if you keep them in the forefront of your mind, on the tables of your mind, you'll be fine. Verse 4 goes on to say, so shall you find favor or grace and good understanding in the eyes of God. And who? Man. He said, you're going to find favor and grace in the eyes or the presence of God and man when you do the things he told you to do, to hold on to these things in your mind. Don't let someone lead you astray down a path that God didn't tell you to take. You read this book yourself. Don't believe when they tell you, well, this means this or this. You should go look yourself, shouldn't you? Because they twist a few things. I've been accused for years of changing the Bible, rewriting the Bible. Well, I'm not rewriting the Bible. I am changing it, though. I'm changing it back to what the original language says, what the Greek and Hebrew says. The English language doesn't do it any justice. And all those translators didn't do any justice, and God was perfectly aware of it. He said in Proverbs 25:2, it's the glory of God to conceal the matter and to honor kings to search it out. He concealed the word matter and thing, or both the word debar, which means word. So he said, it's the glory of God to conceal the word, but to honor kings is to search out the word. And are we not called to be a nation of kings and priests under a God who searches out the word daily, right? Okay? So if we know those things, we don't have a problem with it. We know that God gave us a job to do, and we're going to sift through all this dust and rock and garbage and stuff laying around here, and we're going to find the truth. Verse 5, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Is that part of it? Is that 90%? 95? 25? It's 100%. All means all, doesn't it? And it says, do not lean unto your own understanding. Literally, it says, do not rely on your own understanding. Don't trust what your own mind tells you. Trust what the Spirit of God tells you. Now, you remember what Jesus said in the book of John, John 10? My sheep hear my voice, and the voice of another they will not follow, okay? Now, so the other that he's talking about not following is your own mind or any other man, okay? But we got to hear what God says. And as I teach, I've told you for years, whenever I speak, you should be hearing God witness to what I'm saying. The Spirit inside of you should be witnessing to it or saying nay. Yay or nay. You know, make up your mind. One way or the other. Either you agree with it or you don't. But don't believe it because I said it. You got to hear it yourself. But you trust Him and everything will be fine. In verse 6 it goes on, it says, in all your ways. Is that most of them or is that again all of them? Reads all to me. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He shall direct your paths. Then who's in control? All I have to do is pay attention to what He tells me. Acknowledge Him, and He will direct my paths. It says another place that the Lord directs the paths of the righteous. Okay, if I'm doing what I'm supposed to, He's going to direct my paths. By the thought process He's putting in my head, He will direct me. He won't come down and say, Dave, make a right turn. Dave, make a left turn. Dave, stop. Dave, start. You know, He don't say those things. See, that's that discernment in your mind, that intellectual wisdom, intellectual ability to make the right, wise choice, that common sense we talked about earlier. So we'll know that He'll direct me internally, not externally. You got that? Any direction that comes external, guess where it's coming from? Outside, that's external, and it's not God. God is internal. Verse 7, be not wise in your own eyes. Isn't that arrogance and pride? Think that, and you know how many people who would never dare think that they're arrogant and prideful are arrogant and prideful? Because they think, and this is the greatest form of idolatry in the world, and I don't flinch a bit in saying this. It's the greatest form of idolatry. You can talk about all the idols in the Catholic Church. You can talk about all the idols in Buddha and Mohammed and all this stuff they're doing all over the world, these statues of people. And that's not the idolatry God's talking about. The idolatry, the worst idolatry there is what you think in your own mind. When you think, you can't possibly be wrong. That's the greatest form of idolatry. But so be not wise in your own eyes. Revere the Lord, not fear. God don't want us to be afraid of Him. He wants us to love Him and come to Him. So it should say, revere the Lord and depart from evil. If I love God, how could I stay in evil? See, something's got to go. It shall be healing to what? Actually, it's your umbilical cord. And you know, there's a lot of wisdom in that, because right now, what have they found about the umbilical cord, that blood in there, what it's worth? It's this very source of life. There's so many things they could cure diseases. Babies are almost immune to diseases when they first born for a certain period of time until that blood works out of their system or whatever, you know. But in that, what they call stem cell research, that stem cells in that navel cord, there's a lot to it. And he says right here, there it is. It shall be healing to your umbilical cord and marrow, or refreshing. The word marrow should be refreshing to your bones. And he's talking about natural things and spiritual things, isn't he? He uses natural things to tell you about the spiritual things. So he said, it's going to be a healing to your navel cord. What is your navel cord to you, really? It's your sustaining of life until you come to life, isn't it? From the mother till you go to the father, right? Okay. So here's the thing. He's showing you that your healing of that, when you're cut off from the mother, the healing to take you from mama into the world comes from what? Acknowledging God in verse 6, right? Leaning not unto your own understanding in verse 5. Trusting the Lord with all your heart. These things is what breaks you and heals you from the separation from the man system of church, the mama, into the kingdom of God. The truth. Didn't Jesus say, if you continue in my word, you'll be my disciples indeed, my disciplined ones, and you shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free? And everybody says, oh, yep, truth sets you free. No, it's the truth you know. And that's his instructions. You know it, see, because he gave it to you. It's not something you do yourself. He'll give it to you. Verse 9, it goes on, says, honor the Lord from thy wealth. Does that have to be expounded on? When you receive, what do? Just an automatic thing. You give. I mean, that's just, what did God do? He just gave. That's not necessarily stuff. It can be a lot of ways. Huh? Just share with your life with everybody. You know, you get 24 hours a day. How many hours a day do you give to God? Do I give? Well, I mean, the average person doesn't give 24 minutes. Yeah. But I'm saying, even most of the good, what you call good, quote, Christian people, they don't give 24. They give one day, one whole day, 24 hours a week, 1/7 of it even. And if it be 1/10 of it, how many hours is in a week? I don't know. 168 hours. Does anybody give 16.8 hours a week just to God?
Which way are you looking
at? No, I'm saying dedicating it to doing things or studying or something like that to help their spiritual growth. If you put 16.8, say 17 hours a week into studying, where would you be? No, I'm just saying about your spiritual growth. Where would you be? You know, because most people don't put that kind of time in. See, that's not condemnation. God doesn't call everyone to do it. I'm just saying, if He wants a tithe from all my substance, He gave me 24 hours of time. How valuable is my life to Him? I should be giving some of it back to Him, you know.
Well, I look at that as a relationship.
It is.
How much time do I give in my relationship?
Absolutely. But I'm just saying, in the very basic of it, if they want to go legalism with tithing and make it legalistic and say, I'm supposed to give 10%, well, even 10%, you know, what am I giving? If I give 20 or 30, like there's places in the book shows it, you know, where would I be? When they start getting, you're talking about 30, 40 hours a weekend. 2.4 hours a day. But if you was going to 20 or 30%, you're looking 6, 7, 8 hours a day, you know. And how many people would do that? Very few. But God didn't call everybody to do it. See, there's no condemnation in it. I'm just saying, you should be aware of everything that God has given you in your life. I should be able to share that. All things. And he says, honor the Lord from your wealth and from the first fruits. You know what that word is? Of all your increase or all your income. It's the word resheath. The same word is the very first word in the scriptures in Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, it's resheath. Not in the beginning, it's resheath. And there's what the word should be right there. It comes from that word resheath. Okay?
I'll read it again.
Okay. Honor the Lord from your wealth and with the first fruits of all your increase. Yeah, it should be that. But I'm telling you, that word is there. Its first fruit is correctly rendered, where in Genesis 1:1, it's not. Okay, now we clarified it. Verse 10, so shall your barns be filled with plenty, and your vats, not presses, but your vats, shall burst out with new wine. Now, the difference is a press is something that presses wine. It doesn't store wine. The vat is what catches the wine once it comes through the press. Right? So he said, you're pressed. You do all this and it'll burst out with new wine. What is new wine?
Revelation.
It's not grape juice, is it? But it's a revelation. New wine is the revelation of God's word. When I continue to do these things and follow these patterns that we're talking about here, my barns will be filled with everything. So it's not saying my buildings out here aren't going to be filled up with a bunch of stuff. He's talking about your mines will be filled up with plenty, won't they? And your vats will be filled with new wine. You'll be able to understand everything. If God gave everybody all the things that they think, the physical things they want, they would be drawn to all the natural stuff and they'd lose the spiritual side of it, and then all they'd do is be caught right back in the world of wealth and power. That's all it is. And we have to watch that.
Wouldn't that new wine also give you direction?
Do what?
Wouldn't that also give you direction?
Sure it will. If you've got the understanding of the word, it's absolutely going to give you direction.
So if you let the word just touch the Lord with all your heart and mind,
mm-hmm.
and seeing God or relying on your own understanding,
that's direction.
That's
the beginning of your direction there. And keep saying more. Well, Proverbs 6, I think, or 7 goes in and says, you know, never have enough. More. We'll get to there. But that's what happens if he gives us the natural without the spiritual. Okay? First, and look what comes up the next verse. My son, despise not the discipline. That's what the word chastening means. It should be discipline. Despise not the discipline of the Lord, neither be weary of his correction. In Hebrews 12, 5 through 11, it talks about this son, the ones he loves, he chastens or disciplines, right? Corrects. And that, isn't that what it's saying right here? Okay. If he loves you, he's got to correct you. If he gives you everything, and just like the cherubim keeping us out of the Garden of Eden until it's time, see, he's got to chasten us first, and then he can turn us back into the garden, the mind of Christ, and there's no problem. Because we're not going to have an abusive power, are we? That's why our government is so screwed up, because we have no discipline. We have no character. They're characters, but not the right kind of characters. We have no character to the men and women who are fulfilling these offices of leadership. And the same thing in the churches. They go to school from a book to learn how to be godly. I'm sorry, you don't learn it out of a school and some man asking you questions, did you read that chapter and tell me what it said? And you memorize something and quote back what he said. That is not teaching character. Character comes from living life and doing the right things and treating people the right way, even when you're mistreated. That's a discipline that only God can give you. You cannot get that from a man. Man's always tried to supersede God and take over control of everything. Well, they can run all the seminaries they want, and it's okay, but they will never get to God through a seminary. It don't work. If it would work, God would have already said in this book somewhere, y'all build a bunch of seminaries because I can't get the job done, so y'all help me. That makes a lot of sense, don't it? I mean, how stupid it is, but that's oxymoron, but that's the way they think. Verse 13, happy is the man, and that word right there is Adam. Happy is the Adam man that finds wisdom, and the Adam man that gets or secures understanding. See, we're all Adam men, aren't we? Until we're enlightened. So he's saying the natural man, once he gets this stuff, see, once he gets a hold of this wisdom and understanding, he's happy. Because you know why? He's found who he is. He's found his purpose. He's found his identity. Why would you not be happy if you had your identity and your purpose in life? And isn't that what everyone's seeking after? You know, I've read this book so many times, but I've never seen it like I see it now. It's so simple. You know, it just makes it so simple. And I think God makes me wait for certain books to teach, you know, and it makes a difference. Verse 14, because the merchandise or the profit, I should say profit, because the profit of it is better than the profit of silver and the income thereof than fine gold. He's saying this wisdom and understanding has more profit to it than silver and gold. Isn't that what he said? See, everybody's figuring on the wealth and possession in the natural, and that's not where it's at. This wisdom and knowledge is where it's at. And I've known a lot of good men who've got caught up in this realm of starting to understand some things of God, and then they divert and take a path side course back over to the wealth and understanding. Because I've heard these men say, I'm a man of God, and I should be directing you leadership of the world. Leaders of the world should be coming to the church asking us direction. And that's someone still wanting to elevate themselves. There's so many people that start this, and then next thing you know, they're caught up in finances, they're caught up in self-promotion. And self-promotion has nothing to do with God. Because he said, if you exalt yourself, he will abase you. He'll knock you down. And if you abase yourself, he'll exalt you. See? And there's so many people trying to self-exalt. And the temptation's there every day to me. But I have to slap myself in the mouth every day. That's just the way it is. Because I am not concerned with what people think about me as long as I know what my Father thinks about me. And I do. So I'm not concerned with it anymore. It's okay. They can do anything they want to. That's my peace and my freedom. And see, they can't take that away. I can choose to give it up, but nobody can take it from me. How do you think Paul could and Silas could sing in the prison when they were ripped, their flesh was ripped open and people above them was urinating down on them? How do you think they could sit there in peace and sing songs to the Lord? Say, you can't take it from nobody. You have to willfully give it up. And that ain't going to happen. I can just tell you, it ain't going to happen. Pull the trigger. Plant it right between my eyes. I don't care. I'm not giving up the peace of God. Because you can't take, you can take my life, but you can't even do that until God says so. Because he's in control of all things, whether they believe it or not. They don't believe it anyway, but that's okay. But I know it's the truth. And me believing it didn't make it true. It was true because God said he was in control. That's the end of it. 15. She's more precious than rubies, or literally it says pearls. Now, why they didn't write pearls, I don't know, but they put rubies in here instead of pearls. She's more precious than pearls. And I think pearls come from a better example of what makes a pearl? Irritation. An irritation inside the oyster and all that pressure and irritation. And that's what makes us worth something, doesn't it? All the pressures and the irritations we go through in life makes us that precious pearl. And remember Jesus talked about having that costly pearl in the Gospels. He went and bought it, you know, found it, bought the field, which we are. And all the things that you can desire are not equal to her. All the things you can desire are not equal to that what God has, which is wisdom and understanding. The wisdom and understanding of God, nothing can be compared to God's wisdom and understanding. Because it brings everything with it. Life. Look at verse 16. Length of days is in her right hand, and in her left hand, wealth and honor. So he says, if you go God's way, you don't worry about wealth and riches and honor. You just do what God tells you to do. And he said, in this, and he called wisdom she, right? In her right hand, she has what? Length of days, longer life, right? A long life, and in her left hand, wealth and honor. So if you pursue it in God's manner, it'll all come back around, won't it? So what's the point? Why try to get it yourself and struggle and suffer and go through it for nothing when you can do it God's way and it's eternal? We're talking about the eternal things of God. God's not an Indian giver. He don't give you something and jerk it back. When you get something from God, you got it for eternity. Verse 17. Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. Hello. Which one of her paths are not peace? Now that tells me if I go down a path and there's no peace in that path, am I in the right path? Should that tell you something? See, a lot of people don't know how to read a map. And bless my wife's heart, she can't read a map. She's doing better, but she can't read a map very well. But see, this is teaching you how to read the map of life. I understand it. But the natural, when you have struggles with a natural map. So, but look what he says. Her ways are planned and all of her paths are peace. So if I look at this map of life and I see something that's unstable, in violence and frustration, that's not my path, is it? What do? I avoid that, correct? I turn another direction. I turn my GPS on, God's protection service, and go down the right path, right? Or his pointing service, whichever way you want it. Plan service. There you go. She is a tree of life to them, verse 18, that lay hold upon her, wisdom and understanding. And happy is everyone that retains her. It's a repetitive thing. God says it time and time again. He'll say the same thing, change the words just a little tiny bit, and say the same thing. What do you think he's trying to tell you? How about emphasis? He's putting emphasis on the statement. Do you understand that? He's trying to make you say, this is important. This is important. I've said it again. This is important. Verse 19. The Lord by wisdom has what? Founded the earth? No. He laid the foundation of the earth by wisdom. And by understanding has he established the skies. I know they say they do the foundation of the earth and establish the heavens because it sounds spiritual, but the word says sky. So he's built this earth. Would you agree? He did it. He laid the foundation. And it came from wisdom and understanding, correct? God's wisdom and understanding put it all together. Would you agree to that? Okay. By his knowledge, the seas are broken up. He's telling you, this is all God. This ain't nothing to do with man. Man's just trying to figure out what God's already done in their science. And the clouds drip down the dew. True, isn't it? They drip down the dew. My son, let not them depart from your eyes or your sight or your vision. Keep understanding, not sound wisdom, but understanding and purpose. Keep a hold of that understanding and purpose, that wisdom and understanding. Keep a hold of this stuff, okay? Don't let it depart from your vision or your eyes. It's in your mind, correct? He said, this is what you got to hold on to. So shall they be life to your soul and grace to your neck. Correct? So shall there be life unto your soul. So he's saying, if you keep a hold of God's wisdom and understanding and your purpose for life, it will be life unto your soul, to your natural body. It's even going to work in your natural body and in your and grace to your neck, or favor to your neck. Now, what does your neck represent? Strength. See? So you're, even in your natural strength, these things are going to flow from the spiritual into the natural. If you live in this spiritual realm, it can't help but exude out of your spirit over into your natural soulish life, can it? Because it's the very core of your being. And whatever you live, that's what you're going to live from. And that's your substance, your source of life. Sure it does. And that's why I say all the paths are in peace in verse 17. Right? All the paths in wisdom and understanding and purpose is peace. Take people in the natural who have a driven purpose in their life, and look, even though they're driven about things, you can see a type of peace around them. They feel comfortable in knowing what they're doing. Take a doctor in an operating room with confidence. He can cut someone open, stop their heart, repair that heart, and put it back. You think that's a person with no confidence? Man, to take someone and kill them and bring them back to life, that's nothing but pure confidence. And a lot of times in the natural, it turns into pure arrogance. See, because it's not tempered with the Spirit of God. That's the difference between arrogance and confidence. If it's tempered by the Spirit of God, it's confidence. But if it's not, it's arrogance. That's why so many of your doctors become very arrogant, because they feel they have life in their hands, and they do, but they don't realize who gave them the ability to do that. Okay, where am I at? Point three. Then shall you walk or live in the course of life safely. When you have these things, when you have the wisdom and discretion and the purpose of your life, when you have all these things, you will live in your course of life safely. Hello? Fear not. And he said, your foot shall not stumble. That means your lifestyle will be sustained, won't it? You'll live right. When you're living his lifestyle, how could it fail? There's only one answer for that, isn't there? It can't. It's impossible. When you lie down, you shall not be afraid. Yea, you shall lie down and your sleep shall be sweet. He says he gives his beloved rest. If you don't believe you're one of his beloved, if you don't believe in the trust in him, right? Trust him with all your heart and lean not to your own understanding, or rely not on your own understanding. Guess what? You're going to have trouble sleeping. Things are going to run wild. Them cherubim are going to eat you up. But when you realize he's in control and you trust him, your sleep will be sweet. Verse 25. Be not afraid of sudden fear, neither of the desolation of the wicked when it comes. And there's a lot of people says, I'm not afraid of anything. But when they see the desolation of the wicked come, and everybody looks the wrong way at this, the desolation of the wicked is not external. It's the desolation of the wicked thoughts in my mind. Don't get excited when God starts ripping these things out of your mind. Because when he begins slaying those beasts in your mind, you're going to squall too, like everybody else. But he's trying to tell you up front, don't be afraid of it. Don't be afraid of it. Verse 26, because the Lord shall be your confidence and shall keep your foot or your lifestyle from being taken or tripped, keep you from being tripped up. Right? If you trust him. Verse 27, withhold not good from them to whom it is due when it is in your power to do it. Who is them to whom it is due? Withhold not good from, and literally that word that's in the Hebrew there for them to whom it is due, that whole section right there, is literally says Baal. Now that's the Hebrew word, B-A-A-L, 1167 in the Strong's. But what it means is master, husband, or owner. Withhold not good from the master, from your husband, from the owner, when it is in your power to do it. See, it's not about talking about, now, it's twisted a little bit there. But see, who's in control? So who are we talking about? They try to make it natural, but we're trying to put it back over on the spiritual side. Caesar's and the God is what's God's. This is God's we're talking about. We're not talking about Caesar now, are we? See? I'm trying to put it back on the spiritual side of this thing and realize, what am I trying to do here? Render what is due to him. What is due to him? A-L-L, right? So I render it back to God. It's in my power to do it. Why not? Because I don't want to, usually. Correct? That's the only reason it don't go back. Say not to your neighbor, go and come again, and tomorrow I will give when you have it with you. It's here right now. I have the ability, I have the possession of everything God wants. I don't have to create anything. I don't have to work anything up. God has already placed the treasure within you. Correct? So all I have to do is release it back to God. I don't have to try to make something God wants. I don't need an idol. I don't need all this stuff. I don't need all these trinkets they hang on themselves and labels and badges and buttons. All I got to do is release what God has placed within this earthen vessel and give it back to him. That's all he wants. He wants a tithe from the earth. He didn't say he wanted you to dig something out of the earth down there on you're walking on and make something out of it and give it back to him, did he? He wants it out of here. It's the relationship he wants you to have. Give you yourself back to him. Okay? Verse 29. Devise not evil against your neighbor, seeing he dwells securely by you. Well, the only one we're talking about is the man inside of us, the only neighbor we're talking about. See, our natural man? That's my neighbor. Because the Christ is the resident, isn't he? The neighbor is the one squatting close. Strive not with a man. And that word there is absolutely Adam. Strive not with Adam without cause, if he has done you no harm. So, you know, there's no sense for me to get up in the morning and slap myself in the face. Well, no, I'm talking about seriously. Why would I want to wrestle with my natural body, Adam, when he hasn't done anything to me? Usually it's me doing something to me. Why would I want to get up and fight with myself? You know, my body serves a purpose. It works sometimes, functions sometimes. You know, at times it doesn't as well as others. Let it lay down. Don't worry about it. See, don't fight this thing. You utilize and live within this body, correct? Why do I hate this flesh? I don't hate this flesh I live in. I hate the fleshly thinking in my brain. See, we get our idea of what flesh is. It's not spirit. It's not natural, but it's spiritual. Not physical, it's spiritual. And the flesh that God's concerned with is this between our ears. That gray, what's in that gray matter up there? You know, gray is a form of darkness, isn't it? Okay, verse 31. Envy not thou the oppressor or the man of violence. Don't envy that natural man. You know, we see a lot of people doing a lot of things, seem like they're getting by with a lot and accomplishing a lot in life. But, you know, if you could walk in their shoes, you'd probably be living in pure hell. Because they probably are too. Don't envy that natural man, that man of violence, and choose none of his ways. How many of his ways should we choose? Okay, not any of them. Verse 32, because the what? The devious or perverse. Devious or perverse is what? A disgusting thing to the Lord. The devious and perverse is a disgusting thing to the Lord. But his secret, and there's something else with that. Look at that word for me. Have you got it there? Huh? Now, there's something in this word I need to see because I started to write it, and then when I wrote it down, I didn't write it real good, and I whited it out part of it, and I didn't finish it. And I want you to hear it. I know I missed something there, but I caught myself. I wasn't gone. I'm not going to skip over it. Secret. On the word secret, yeah. Secret counsel. There you go. That's the word I wanted. Huh? New King James has it right. The New American Standard, I think, does too. But anyway, it's a secret counsel. I left two words and I didn't finish, two letters and I didn't finish it. So, but his secret counsel is with the righteous or within the righteous. See, his secret counsel is within the righteous. The righteous is not everyone, is it?
Not at this time.
It's not. So the secret counsel was with him. And see, everybody thinks they can pick up the book and read it. And I know I tell you, you all got to study it, but you'll find out if God wants you in there or not. You'll find it out. But the secret counsel is with the ones he's chosen to understand. Everybody can't see the same thing that we can see in this book.
Isn't the secret counsel what Paul spoke about, the mystery?
Sure, it's the mystery. Absolutely. Same thing. It's the mystery of God. The mysterion of God. It's a secret to be revealed so it can remain a secret. See, it's revealed to us, but it's still a secret. Because I can go talk this to people and they look at me and go, huh? They can't even understand it when I speak English words to them. Because it's not their time. And I understand it. It's okay. If I've understood what God said, I would understand they can't understand. And why should I get upset? His secret counsel is within the righteous. The curse of the Lord, verse 33, is in the house of the wicked. Now, we're not talking about the house across the street or up on the hill. I know people see this thing, and I know people preach it, and they said, all them dirty, rotten sinners out there today, it's not in church. God's curse is in their house, and that's not what it's talking about. We are the house of God. It's the personal body. It's my body, myself. This is where God... Well, God doesn't really dwell in my body. He dwells in my spirit, okay? Get right down to it. So... anyway, the house of the wicked, where the wicked lives, is in the flesh, right? Do you live in the flesh? No. We live in spirit. See? So, God lives in my spirit, but the curse of the Lord lives in the house of the wicked, which is the flesh. But he blesses the habitation of the righteous. Okay?
And that flesh is not good.
This flesh is not righteous. It cannot be. Flesh and blood shall not inherit the kingdom of God, can it? It's the thought process. It's the mind. Verse 34, surely, or if he scoffs, not scorns, but if he scoffs the scoffers, he gives favor to the humble. If he scoffs at the scoffers, he gives favor to the humble. Right? You reap what you sow. Right? Verse 35, the wise shall inherit what? Honor. The wise shall inherit glory or honor. Both words come out of the same word, kabod. But shame or disgrace shall be the exaltation of what? You know what that word fool is? It means stupid, simple, and arrogant. Now let me read this 35th verse the way it should be. Or let me read 34 and 35. Let me start in 33. See the context, that big P in front by the 33 in your writing? There's no mark there? Okay, well, that's a context change. It's in this Bible. It shows it. There's a context change here in 33. The curse of the Lord is in the house of the wicked, we're talking about in the flesh, but he blesses the habitation of the righteous. That's the spiritual side. Surely, or if he scoffs at the scoffers, he gives favor to the humble. The wise shall inherit glory or honor, but disgrace shall be the exaltation of the stupid, the simple, and the arrogant. And you know, we've talked about the arrogant today, haven't we? About the ones that get caught up in themselves and they have this arrogant view that their thought process can't be wrong. They don't know for sure, but they'll defend it to their death because they just can't say, I might be wrong. They can't do it. And I understand they don't have the ability to say, I might be wrong. And everybody says, oh, anybody can say it. No, they can't. If God doesn't give them grace and mercy, they can't break that pride. And there's nothing we can do about it. Evidently, that tool hasn't done its work yet. It has that iron tool hasn't beat anybody down yet, has it? Hadn't sharpened anybody the way it should yet. That'll do me for the day. What about y'all?